I'm Robert Desay, and I'll be here with you on Lingua Franca for the next few weeks while Jill Kitson is away. Well, if you thought that word games were quaint relics of a bygone era, you know, something great aunts did on a wet Sunday afternoon, something the readers of Girl's Own Paper giggled over before the war, then think again. It's true that word games, puns, acrostics, charades and so on, were once thought of as merely innocent entertainments. Frank Scully's book, Fun in Bed, for instance, which came out in 1934, says it all, really, or the title does, but not these days. In this postmodern era we've all ended up splat in the middle of, nothing is merely anything. Nowadays, the obsession with word games, and it is an obsession, professional help is the only way out for some people, punsters who can't stop punning, crossword fanatics who can't get out of bed without the high they get from indulging in the first crossword of the day. The Queen, for example, apparently does the Daily Telegraph crossword before she gets up in the morning. The obsession with word games nowadays can be interpreted either as a desire to trim the patriarchal hegemony with non sequiturs, up with frivolity, down with meaning, or the opposite, as an impulse, rather like a poet's really, to make sense, or at least ordered nonsense, of a random world. As in the case of poetry, there are fashions. Remember conundrums? When is a door not a door? Why is a thought like the sea? Because it's a notion, obviously. The Babylonians posed conundrums, as did the Greeks. But does anyone, except the odd schoolchild, play with them these days? Or charades? When did you last play charades? In severe decline now, charades, although they've actually been around for over 200 years, very fashionable in the late 18th century. In those days, of course, in educated circles, in London or Paris, you could get away with answers like lutestring and Agamemnon. My first is a Turkish dignitary, my second an Egyptian head, Clytemnestra loathed my whole. The charade made a last-gasp appearance on Monty Python's Flying Circus, as a matter of fact, perhaps you saw it. It was in that sketch where the foreman of a jury gives its verdict to the judge by miming the action of tying a rope into a knot, then swimming like a fish, and then drinking a cup of tea. Not gill tea, you see. The judge read it as not gill cup, and that was the verdict he recorded. I don't remember if the offender was hanged or not. Hanged is certainly what Sidney Smith, parson and wit, wrote that anyone caught playing charade should be, without benefit of clergy, too. Unpardonable trumpery was his verdict on charades. Lewis Carroll loved them, of course, and I have it on good authority that they're the Queen's favourite game. Indeed, word games seem to arouse strong passions, for and against, in almost everyone. Killing a punster, for instance, was justifiable homicide, according to Oliver Wendell Holmes. And Freud said that puns were the lowest kind of verbal joke. Coleridge agreed with him. Whatever you think of puns, they're in their heyday. The internet is chock full of pun sites. There's even a site for Finnish puns in English, I notice. Don't go there, is my advice. Newspapers all over the world seem to employ punsters to write their headlines. You must have noticed. The Umpire Strikes Back, for example, about an ambitious euphonium player. You'll Be in Trouble, about a stolen sheep. The idea of putting sheep stolen is obviously laughable. The pun is based on a simple idea. You play on words which have two meanings. Easy to do in English. Can't speak for Finnish, with our hundreds of common homonyms. Time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana, that sort of thing. Harmless, frivolous, utterly human. No other creature can do it. Puns, and conundrums, and charades for that matter, are word games with an audience, quite literally entertainments. Some word games, however, are more solitary affairs, crosswords, for example, or composing palindromes. And perhaps for that reason, they strike many people as pointless, just time fillers, a suspiciously self-pleasuring sort of activity. It's a metaphysical objection which logic alone can't deal with. Perhaps such people find the idea of sitting alone reading poetry pointless as well. And indeed, poetry is surely just a highly refined form of wordplay. high-flown punning with a touch of acrostics, the word square, and univocalics. Univocalics, by the way, being the game where you, for example, write a poem or even a novel with no E's in it, say, like George Perec's notorious novel La Disparition. And it's hard to do in French, a novel with no E's. He also wrote a long piece in English, using no vowels except O. To hopscotch from Oxford to Toronto, door to door, took 2 months, and so on. He ended up sounding a bit like a demented owl. The French think they discovered univocalics, naturally, but in fact the Romans did it. The Persians did it, the Spaniards did it, and possibly the Finns. Why they did it is another matter. Now, crosswords are perhaps the most obvious example of a solitary word game. Oddly enough, since almost any word game you can think of the Greeks were playing 3,000 years ago, crosswords are a modern invention. The world's first crossword appeared in a New York newspaper on the 21st of December 1913. It was called a word cross, as a matter of fact, and the English didn't take up the crossword until 1922. Daily crosswords didn't start appearing in the Times until 1930. They became such a craze in those first post-war years that one railway company put dictionaries in certain carriages to provide assistance to its crossword-solving passengers. Doctors warned that crosswords could harm the eyesight, cause insomnia, and trigger various neuroses. A vexatious variant of a crossword is the cryptic crossword. Just reading the clues to a cryptic crossword is enough to reduce whole swathes of the population to weeping and gibbering. Take H-I-J-K-L-M-N-O, for example. Not a problem for a Radio National audience, of course. The answer is clearly water. H-2-O. This one might test you, though. Row back and forth in boat if fitter. Row back and forth in boat if fitter. The smarty pants amongst you will no doubt have found that one a breeze as well. Yes, it's tiff. T-I-F-F. A row, R-O-W, as in row, occurring both backwards and forwards in the phrase boat if fitter. Is the world a better place for your having worked this out? No. Do you feel an explosion of delight in your breast? Yes, you do, because you've solved a riddle. And the most terrifying prospect of all, some might say, is that in this universe, there is no riddle. Scrabble, another modern invention, it became popular in the 1950s. Scrabble combines the delight of crosswords with anagrams. And of course it's not a solitary pleasure. You beat other people at it. And a game is not really a game at all, some might say, unless you can beat somebody at it. Even my dog likes to beat me at tug of war. There's no fun in just tossing his old jeans around by himself. Anagrams, by the way, just to remind you, are what you compose when you take particularly names and rearrange them to make other words. Florence Nightingale, Flit On, Cheering Angel. Britney Spears, Presbyterians. Western Union, No Wire Unsent. Eurovision Song Contest, I Vote On Cretinous Songs, and so on. Surely you've tried it out on your own name. I asked the internet to play with my name the other day. There's a free anagram site on the internet, naturally. But all it could come up with in plain English was torrid base sex, and a few variations on that theme, which, frankly, I found neither witty nor revealing. You might have more luck. Once upon a time, anagrams were thought to have magical properties, you see. Hidden amongst the letters of your name, you might stumble upon the truth about who you really are. A Presbyterian, in Britney Spears' case, say, a big rally ham, in Billy Graham's, an evil Tory bigot, in Virginia Bottomley's. Or you might believe you see your future prophesied. Roosevelt, vote loser. Margaret Hilda Thatcher, halt that mad grim preacher. Anyway, the point is, to get back to Scrabble, that the Scrabble player plays anagrams with the letters in front of him or her. Order out of chaos again, you see. Did you know, by the way, that the highest scoring word on its own is Bezique, the card game? 27 points? Useless, but fascinating information. You can, however, get something like 2,000 points by putting Jack Pudding along the edge of the board. I don't quite know why I'm telling you this, but I can picture the rabid glint in all the Scrabble players' eyes as I speak. Sesquioxidizing is a goer as well, by the way. Just keep it in mind. The vast majority of word games, though, are not about beating anyone. They're a private tussle with a meaningless world. Some people are obsessed with palindromes, for instance. Madam, I'm Adam, being the most famous. And he said it to Eve, of course, herself the bearer of a palindromic name. That is, spelt the same forwards as backwards. Many palindromes in English have was I, ere I saw, bang in the middle, for obvious reasons. A slut was I, ere I saw Tulsa, and so on. But that's child's play, compared to the creations of some fanatics. And I don't just mean longish sentences of the K, a red nude, peeped under a yak variety. Or straw, no, too stupid a fad, I put soot on warts. I mean, what do you do with sentences like those once you've come up with them? All you can do is gloat. No, an American called Lawrence Levine has written a whole novel as a palindrome. 30,000 words, no less. It's an achievement of sorts, you have to admit. Pangrams attract the same kind of single-minded addicts. The idea is to make up a sentence containing every letter of the alphabet, but ideally using each letter only once. A sentence of 26 letters, in other words. The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog is a contemptible attempt at a pangram. It's got four O's, three E's, two H's, two R's, two T's, and two U's. Boards jog, vex nymph, flick quartz. Better, but it's still got two A's. Have a go at this next time you're driving to Udnadatta. You'll find you've arrived before you knew you'd left. But no medieval Welsh musical instruments, please, or Bhutanese coins. It wouldn't be cheating exactly, but it would be cheap. The field is still wide open, by the way. The letters of the alphabet can be combined in over 403 million billion billion ways. Something like that, anyway. So you're still in with a chance. If none of these games put that glint in your eye, there are dozens of others. Lewis Carroll pioneered quite a few of them, and the Queen, I understand, is a great enthusiast. The chain was one of his, for example. Turn cat into dog, say, in four steps. Cat, cot, dot, dog. More into less, black into white, hate into love, and so on. Ape into man is one that's fun to play with your fundamentalist friends because, interestingly enough, it more or less illustrates how evolution works. The Rebus has recently had a new lease on life with text messaging and the personalised number plate. It's been popular since the ancient Egyptians first came up with it. Basically, it's just writing using a variety of symbols, or using symbols such as letters in a variety of ways. That I Love New York sticker is a rebus, for instance, with its little heart symbol. As is the dentist's number plate, now listen to this, F-U-N-E-D-K. I'll leave you to work that one out for yourselves. And look, if you're really bored, you know, caught in a traffic jam, stuck at the cricket with a spouse, then here's a trick. See how many words you can come up with using the letters in Psalter. You know, the psalm set to music, with a P at the front. Until you get to well over 200, you just haven't been trying. The Oxford Guide to Word Games, by the way, is a wonderful compendium of popular word games, if you're looking for new ones or just want to understand the finer points of old ones. Next week on Lingua Franca, I'll be talking about how not to say what you mean, the language of flattery. I'm Robert Desay. You've been terribly kind to listen to me today with such attention. I look forward to your company again at the same time next week.
Oh, Robert, to say we would not miss it for the world, and we'll never forget that Britney Spears is an anagram for Presbyterians, or indeed that Robert Desay is an anagram for Torah to Base 6. Now, there's lots of good things still to come on Radio National. Tonight, for example, there's Andy Ford's marvellous conversation with Karlheinz Stockhausen, whose music is some people's idea of absolute hell, and yet he is one of the most significant figures in 20th century music, and he's just turned 75, and you can hear him tonight on The Music Show at 10 o'clock talking to Andy Ford. Next up, music of another kind, singers of renown. No Stockhausen there. It's Radio National, where it's 4 o'clock. It's news time.